up to throw it into the street itself, okay? And as Rashi says, because somebody who's walking barefoot, right, is liable to have, you know, the venom sticking to the, you know, the place where the toes, you know, join together, right? And as soon as, you know, a little bit, and even if a little bit, just that it's been no kibbutzo, and you know, it penetrates, it comes in through a hole, let's say, in the flesh, shuv in a refuah, then there is no cure anymore for it. All right. Now the next thing, what does it say? It says not to use it, you know, to put on the floor in his house, right, for cleaning. V'hashkiv eshoefer, all right? V'avok shelo yaleh. Those days, what did they have? They had dirt floors, you understand? So, you don't want the dirt to rise, so what did they do? So, they would wet it, the cook down, right. Yeah. Okay, and of course, I mean, we see, all right? Then, all right, okay. And obviously, why shouldn't he use it, let's say, you know, for kneading clay, you know, in order to use it for making bricks and things like that? Because it's liable to get stuck, you know, someplace in his hands, right? Nor should he give it to his animal. I mean, the animals could also possibly be harmed by it, whether it's his own animal or somebody else's animal, right? Nor should he use it, this water, you know, to wash his hands or his face or his feet. But now it says, Acherim Omrim. There are those who say, however, right, that Bokom Sheyesh Sirto Osur Ein Sirto Mutar. In other words, there are those who say that where there is a crack in the skin, you understand?
Yeah.
A crack, then in that particular case, don't use it. Okay? But because he says, "Sirta sedek sho'eres b'sakev sham," right? "V'yena noifel by hair v'doikev abasar." In other words, if you have a crack, it easily it could go in and simply remain over there, and you know, it's going to be hard. But where there are no cracks, then according to the Acherim, according to other authorities, it would be permissible. So Gemara says, "Acherim hanotanin kama." They're also holding the same as the Tanakham, the same as the first authority that we mentioned. So he says, Iko benayhu gav hayad the gav haregel verumne the apin. It says, the difference is with if the back of the hand, in other words, over here where you don't normally have cracks, right?
Oh, I happen to get it.
Right, yeah, so in that case, you have to be worried. Or the top of the foot, right, or the cheekbones.
What is
a regal is foot. The top of the foot,
that.
Right. Okay. And rumanidape means over here, like the cheekbones over here. Okay. Omamar. Another authority comes back to the same story, and he says, now, you mentioned, he says, right? Do not use it, this kind of water that, you know, has been uncovered, to give drink either to your animal or to somebody else's animal. Tanya, but didn't we learn in some place another authority who said, that his own animal he could give it to, but not to somebody else's animal. Course, what's the problem with somebody else's animal? The answer is that he could sue you. If you harm somebody else's animal, he could sue you for the cost of, you know, what it was. Absolutely. So they say, well, what are we talking about? He says. He says, Kitanya, hui. He says, there, we're talking about somebody else. What kind of an animal are we talking about that you could give, you know, water to, even if it belongs to somebody else? He says, Lushunra, a cat. You're so shouldn't be off on the gun, you're right.
I was thinking about that, yeah. It's really.
Cat, he says.
Cat, I'm familiar now,
right. So, he says, Ehochi, if that's the case, the Chabre Name, the Chabre Kochish, the Day Dami Kochish. What are you telling me? I mean, look, if you're afraid of venom, it could harm anybody's cat. Right, or anybody's animal. The other guy's cat just as much as it harms your cat, right? So he says, yeah, but, he says, did they name kochish, right? It could also be harmful, it could also get skinny as a result. So he says, hodor bori. Well, he says, all right, the animal could get healthy again. So he says, no, it was the chavet name hodor, hodor bori. So, the other person's cat can also get fat again. In other words, recover, right? Become bari. Bari now in modern Hebrew, of course, means healthy. Okay.
Bari.
Right. Yeah. So he says, well, zimnin the boil is bunah, mafshit le minay. He says, you know, your own animal, that's your own private business, he says. But as far as giving it to another animal, he says, maybe the animal, maybe the owner wants to sell it, and if it, you know, it's unhealthy, it gets skinny or something like that, right? He's going to lose money as a result of it, as compared to if the animal were healthy and it had never been given this. All right, so much with that. Okay, all right, we'll learn a little bit longer. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, excuse me, Omer Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Sera. Okay. Rabbi Asi taught that Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Sera, he says, Shlosha Yenos Hain. This is what I said in the past, that there are three different types of wine. Okay? Yain Nesach, again, that's wine which is used for libation purposes. Goy uses it in order to worship with it, right? So he says, Osaba no, this we have already learned before, to mean that it's prohibited to derive any benefit, whatever, not just not to drink from it, but also not to do any business or anything like that with it, right? Umetame to mechamura, bechazayas. And not only that, but it's very, very strict as to the law concerning liquids that cause tumor, that cause uncleanliness. Well, I'd rather use the word tumor because it's a technical term. Okay? Alright, so we're ready now for the next daf Lamed Aleph, to begin with it, because it's a continuation of what we had over here. Now, to understand this business of tumor, very complicated business, that we find, you know, originally it's derived, the Bible says, you know, tamehu, right? It's unclean, impure, whatever you want to call it, okay? But from this we derive all kinds of laws concerning what causes impurity and what is affected by it. Is it a person? Is it a dish? Is it a liquid? You understand? Food? Is it ordinary food, hulin, or is it truma, which belongs to the kohen and has to be in a state of purity for the kohen to eat it, otherwise he is guilty of transgressing the law of the Torah. So, you understand? So, what he's saying here is that not only is Yain Nesach prohibited from deriving any benefit whatever from it, but also it could cause Tumah Hamura Kezayis, even if it were a, let's say, a very tiny amount, not more than the size of an olive, okay, a Kezayis, that already would cause Tumah, in anything that it comes in contact with. Okay. Because Tumah Hamura, Rashi explains, that this is Masa, the Ohel Kemes. The Ishkas Tikroivas Abedis Kechovim Lemes. What he's saying over here is that when you have a dead body, the law is that if there is something covering the dead body, then automatically whatever person, for example, is there, or whatever item is there, right, becomes subject to Tumah. And the same applies if you carry it, that's what he means by Maso, right? Or the Ohel, is a covering like a vest, so at any rate, he says that Tikroves Avedes Kechovim, that in other words, sacrificing to idolatry, is the same as the law for a dead body causing Tumah. Okay? As I said, it's very technical. All right, do you have the next page yet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Stam Yenom. This is wine, which is Goyish wine. I mentioned for example, Gallo wine or something like that. All you have to do is to go into the wine store and see there are millions of them, okay? So that is called Stam Yenom. We know it's not used for what? For idolatry. It's used, for them to drink. So what is the law concerning them? So he says, first of all, it's Oser Be'anor, right? Umetame Tumas Bashkin Mirviz, he says. Okay. So he says, it is prohibited to derive any benefit from it. This is what he says over here, right? And at the same time, it would cause Tumah if the amount were not an olive size, but a revius. A revius is about the size, let's say, of a Kiddush cup or something like that, okay? So in other words, that already means, that you have to have more of it in order to cause Tumah, okay? It's not so strict about that. Question is, of course, why Stam Yenom? Why is it that we are prohibited from having any benefit derived from it? So the answer is, Rashi says, Mishum Gezeiros Yenis, it's in order to make sure that we would not be tempted into Yenis. So therefore, even something which is not Yenis, but they make a gezeirah, they make a decree not to make use of it. So in other words, are we allowed to use non-Jewish wine? The answer is no. Right, so get her, exactly.
Doctor, does that mean we can't buy it, sell it?
Excuse me, pardon me?
Does that mean we can't be merchants of it?
It says have a nuah from it, so what kind of a nuah?
The question is, you're right, this is what it would imply, right.
So
it would imply that. However, I don't have to tell you that we're more lenient today about that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a matter of prognosis, and the wine is bottled and sealed and everything else, so that in that particular case, we can be a little bit more lenient as far as the, merchandising it. Okay.
I have another question. In terms of history, Rashi, who is a vintner, wine merchant.
Yeah.
Did he deal only in kosher wines?
Of course.
Only in kosher wines?
Yeah. Only kosher wine. Right. Yeah.
And he sold only to Jews. So they just sold to
Jews. I see I'm losing my voice. We'll do a couple of more minutes and we'll go on diet. Okay?
I know.
Okay. So the Gemara continues and it says, "Hamafkid yeno etzel loyget kechavim, also b'shesiyo u'mutabadon." Now, a Jew has wine, Jewish wine, okay, but he wants to give it over to a goy for safekeeping. Safekeeping is what we mean by a mafkid. In those days, there were no banks. Or maybe he didn't have room enough in his house in order to store it, you understand? So, as a result, he gave it to a goy to keep it for him over there, alright? So, what is that the law in that particular case? So he says, it's also b'shesiyah. In that particular case, that wine, once it's in the goy's house, right, is prohibited to drink. However, no, you are permitted to sell that particular wine. Okay? To get benefit from it. Okay. So they say, wait a minute. The hot non, didn't we learn in the Mishnah, which says, that if a person deposits literally his fruits, okay, by a goy, right, the Shvi'is for the Maser, then they are considered as if they were the Goy's fruits, right, as far as the law of Shvi'is and Maser. Shvi'is, in other words, that the wine, let's say, is not subject to the law of resting on, you know, that the land should lay fallow and so on and so on, because we say that products of the land, of course, so this applies to products of Eretz Israel and Shvi'is, you cannot use them to make any profit. They're there to be eaten, to be drunk, you know, but not to do business with them, you understand? This is why, for people who observe Shvi'is and Eretz Israel, there are farmers, there are the various areas that do that, it's a difficult business for them, because they're not making any money that particular time. So
they give it to a guy, they still can't sell it, it says.
Okay, no. Then this is what it says over here, that if it's given to the guy for safekeeping, then it's considered as if it was the guy's property, and therefore it is not subject to Shvi'is, okay?
Oh.
Nor is it subject to the law, you know, the miser, that it has to be tithed. You have to take a tenth and give it, let's say, to a levy or something like that. You understand? So, what it says now over here is that Kigon says, okay, how do we reconcile it? So he says, Kigon sheyichid lo keren zovis. Okay? For example, what if he set aside a certain corner in the house, right, where he says, there it is, he's going to put it under lock and key, the Jew has the key to it, right, and he's just using that area over there. Then in that case, what is it? Is it considered like Jewish property, or is it considered like the Goyish property, you understand? So this is what the question is right now.
What is Zavi?
Pardon me?
Keren Zavi.
Keren Zavi is a corner.
Or an angled corner?
Yeah. That's exactly what it means. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So he says, Ihochi, if that's the case, you should see an Amenishtere. Right. In that case, then wine also should be permitted to be drunk. Here we said on the top of the page, if you give it to a goy, that he should keep it, you know, safekeeping. You're not allowed to drink from that wine, you can only sell it, right? And now we say, well, if you keep it in a special place, then why shouldn't you be able to drink it? It's under lock and key, and it does not become the property of the goy. So it says there are, so for example, in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, Iklal for the Parvad, he came to a place called Parvad, and Omar, and he said, Klum yesh mishdas bar kapora. Is there anybody who has learned a teaching of bar kapora? So tadalei rab tanchum demin parvad. So there was a certain rab tanchum in Parvad, who remembered a teaching that he had. What was this teaching? He said, "Amavkin yeno, etzel oved kechavim, muto b'shesia." That if you deposit your wine, you give it over to the goy, right? So you are permitted to drink it. Of course, again, how are we talking about? We're talking about where, you know, it was the specified area to which he alone had the, you know, the key. So in that case, it is permitted. So, Kori Aleh, as a result, Bar Kapara quoted a text concerning him. He said, "Mokom sheyipol ha'etz, shem yehu. Wherever the tree falls, there it lies." In other words, you learned once upon a time this teaching, and it still remains with you. Okay? Okay, Shem Yehu, there it is, Salkadate, you may think, Ela Shem Yehu Perosav. There we see the fruits of something that you have learned a long, long time ago, that you remember these things, and you can apply them and teach others what it is. It's a great bracha. And on that happy note, we'll call it a night. Okay, right. I just want to clarify that last statement over there. Okay. He takes this pasuk from the book of Koheles, right? And he says, okay, he says, you know, where the tree falls, right, there it remains, okay? This is literally what it says, okay? So, the Gemara is asking, Shem Yehu Salkadetlech. In other words, you mean that this guy continues to live on and on and on and on over there? So he says, no. Elisham Yehu means Perosav. It means that what he has taught, the fruits of his teachings, this remains over there.
You're talking about Bar Kapara.
Well, yeah, right, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, because it was Rabbi Yochanan who said this. Okay. All right, so now we continue. And let's see, what is tonight? Oh, the 1st of June in the year 2005. And we're continuing now in the Gemara, right, the Beit Zohar, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Yeah, I got it on. Okay. And we're still talking about the same general inyan about how do you make sure that the goy isn't going to switch things on you. You understand? That was part of the problem.
And trusting,
right. So, Omer Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera said, "No kashi." He says, "says it's not a problem because you quote me first. One says that you can drink it, and the other one says you can't drink it, right?" So he says, "They represent two different points of view. Hor Rabbi Eliezer and Hor Rabbanan. One represents the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, and the other represents that of the rabbis who disagree with him." Okay? The Tanya, as we have learned in the Baraisa, it says over there, Echad halakeach, the Echad hasecher, bayis bechatzero, shalevet kechavim, umir uhu yain, mafteach ochosim yad Yisrael. Okay? Here is the situation. Okay. If somebody either purchases,
Jew.
Or who rents, oh yeah, a Jew we're talking about. If a Jew either purchases or rents a house in a courtyard which belongs to Goyim, to you know, to Oved Kechavim, right? Umilo Uhu, and what did he do with this house? He filled it full of, you know, barrels of wine, okay? Umafteach Echosim Biyad Yisrael. And the key, or a seal, upon the casks, is in the hand of the Jew. Then the difference of opinion is that Rabbi Eliezer Matir, Rabbi Eliezer, permits, you know, drinking of it, use of it, and so on and so forth. The Chachamim Oisbim, but the sages prohibit it.
They still can't. Don't know.
Right. They're much stricter, and they're wilder.
The seal in the hand of a Jew. He has
a distinctive seal.
Yeah, so
that, you know, he can press, let's say, in hot wax or something on top of it, in order to seal it. Right. Okay.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
But so where do we go from here?
All right, exactly. Where do we go from here? So that we have to continue. So Rabbi Chiya, the reign of Rabbi Chiya Bar Nachmani. So Rabbi Chiya, the son of Rabbi Chiya Bar Nachmani, Omar Rav Chista, the name of Rav Chista, Omar Rav, who said the name of Rav, V'yavrilo, and there are those who say, no, it's not them, but somebody else. Omar Rav Chista, right, that was Rav Chista, Omar Zahiri, who said the name is Zahiri. V'yavrilo, Omar Rav Chista, and there are those who say it was Rav Chista himself. At any rate, what did he say? So he says, Omali Abba Bar Chama. He says, Abba Bar Chama said to me, that this is what Zahiri had said. All right, so, you know, they try to get the tradition straightened out.
Who said what?
Right, I mean, who said it exactly? Because, as I told you, right, remember, as we say in Pirkei Avos, right, that person who quotes something in the name of the person who actually said it, so maybe Geula Le'olam, right? He brings redemption to the world. This we learned from the Megillas Esther, where it's written, you know, that Esther told the king, you know, about Bixen and Teresh in the name of Mordechai. She said, Mordechai said this, and so on. So, as a result, this brought redemption eventually to the people of Israel. So, of course, it's very important that you should, in all honesty, cite your various sources. Right? You should. So they want to get their sources right. Okay? All right. So, at any rate, what did he say? What does the Zahiri say according to this or according to the other version? I mean, the result is going to be the same. The question is only who said it. But it is Halacha Karabi Eliezer. All right? So what did he say? He said that the Halacha follows Rabbi Eliezer. And what did Rabbi Eliezer say? He said, you can use it, right? Okay, that's what he said. So he is the liberal over here in this particular case.
He's not the Machpir guy.
Right, he's not the Machpir, he's the Makel, as we would say. He's the Makel.
I think
yes.
I was always thinking that when there is a Machpir between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbon, always Halacha Karabon.
It's all very well, but it doesn't always happen. I mean, as a normal rule, it would, right? But there are times there are exceptions, okay? I want to show you again over here. Take a look. You see where it says, Halacha Karabi Eliezer? Right. What do you see? You see that little vav on top over there? Take a look.
Yeah.
Okay, so what does that vav indicate?
Looks like
just before the word halacha. There's a little verb over there.
Little verb.
Okay. So for that, now you have to look in the upper margin over there. The Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. See that? Okay.
Which one margin you look in? The right one?
You go over here, the left margin.
Left margin.
Right. Okay. And you see over here a listing.
Up at the top.
Okay. Right. There's.
Okay.
You go by the small letter. You see, beginning on the top, there's an aleph, the next one is beis, a gimel, a dalet, etc., etc., a vav. All right. So we take a look at vav, and what does it say? It says, maimon sham, right?
Yeah.
And he gives you halacha, etc., etc. Okay? In other words, Maimonides accepts this as being the halacha. Okay? And not only Maimonides, but you go to the next one. And what does it say? Tur Shulchan Aruch Sham. Okay?
Oh.
Okay? Likewise, the Tur and also the Shulchan Aruch. Originally, the Shulchan Aruch was a commentary, a condensation of the Tur, which had preceded it. Okay? So that therefore, the, you know, what shall we say, like the index, pagination and so on, you know, is the same. So if it says Tur Shulchan Aruch, then you know the same thing is also in the Shulchan Aruch over there, right?
Yeah.
And so you follow me, because it's the first paragraph in that particular halacha over there. So as we see from this is the accepted halacha. So this is an indication as to what, you know, the authorities thought. So even though the Rabbanan did not agree with Rabbi Eliezer, but nevertheless, as time went on, that's the point that I'm making right now, as time went on, so then the halacha followed Rabbi Eliezer's opinion in this case. Okay. All right, now to continue. Okay.
There's a whole explanation here.
So now comes a counter argument. This time it's not Rabbi Eliezer, but it is Rabbi Elazar. Okay? Gotta be careful. That little yud over there makes all the difference, you know. Yeah. Okay? So Rabbi Elazar said, Hakol mishtamer b'choysen echad chutz min hayayin she'ein mishtamer b'choysen echad. Okay. Rabbi Elazar is concerned with the validity of a seal. A seal that you put on, let's say, a jar, a barrel, a bottle, or whatever it may be. Okay? So he says, any article that has a seal saying that it is kosher, right? Understand? So that's accepted as valid proof, except with what? Except with wine.
Yeah, right.
Right. Okay? So that's his opinion, okay? Right. So according to Rabbi Elazar, he says the wine, it says she'ein mishtamim b'choysim echod, that the wine, you cannot rely upon it having been kept properly with only one seal upon it.
Were these people contemporaries?
Yeah.
They were contemporaries?
Well, more or less. I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly, I mean, to the There are people. No. He's also a Tana.
Tana.
Yeah, right. Because then it wouldn't be called.
Why they have to know
the Tana is Rabbi. Well, maybe they took it. Okay. Okay.
Could you go over again the mechanism of this seal, how it works?
The seal. Okay. Essentially, in those days, what was a seal? A seal could be different things. We'll see a little bit later on in some of the other methods that they use for sealing. But, for example, we are familiar with wine. We have Jewish wine, okay? What is the top of the bottle?
What's the top of the bottle?
Right.
Cork. It's a seal,
isn't it? Normally, first a seal, and then below it is something else, okay?
Below the seal?
Yeah.
Below the cork?
Yeah. You've never seen it? I mean, on top of the cork, that there should be a seal over it. Right.
What is this supposed to look like?
It looks like wax. It looks like wax. I mean, today they use other items, you know. But if you think about it. Yeah, today it could be plastic, I mean, all kinds of things.
They would put a wax coating.
But the original one, right, was like a wax coating on top of a cork.
The metal foil thing.
So this seal doesn't act, as you would say, as a lock to prevent someone from breaking in, but rather it serves as an indication.
It's an indication, first of all, that it's kosher, but also it's there in order to discourage anybody from trying to remove it,
because then they have to pierce the wax, and you can't duplicate it. Right.
Once you've done that.
Right. And then they'd have to pierce the wax.
So it serves as an indication that the wine was disturbed.
But there were those in olden times who were afraid that if there was only one seal and not a double seal, that one seal could be removed, and then mezuyof, as Rashi says on the top of the page over there, it could be forged. In other words, somebody could forge a seal. So that's what they were afraid of. Right. That's why they insisted upon a double seal.
They sure lived
right.
in hard times, and they
right.
trust them with anything.
Right. Well,
wow.
The grain were not necessarily kind to the Jews. Okay. Okay. So anyway, now we see what is Rabbi Elazar's opinion, right? Okay. So, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, on the contrary, Rabbi, what did Rabbi Yochanan say? He said, Afilu yayin mishtame b'chosim echod. He says, wine too could have only one seal on it, but believe it or not, for lo pligay, there's no argument between the two of them. They're both really trying to say the same thing. Why? Because each of them has an opinion based on earlier authorities, okay? Or Karabi Eliezer, right? Or Karabon. In other words, what Zairi is saying over there is that in reality, right, it goes back again to the difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and the rabbis. Okay, that's what he says. So, in other words, either one seal or two seals, but the argument goes back eventually to these two authorities. Equally, Amri, there are those who say, Omar Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer said, HaKol Mishtavi B'chosim Nisil Chosim. He says, everything can be, kept in the state of kashrus, in other words, with a seal which is placed inside another seal. Chutz min hayayin, except for wine. She'ein mishtame b'chosa b'sochosa. He says, wine cannot be considered kosher if it has a seal within a seal. Because try to figure out a seal within a seal. So we'll see in a moment how they try to figure it out, okay? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, but Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is afilu yayin mishtamim b'chosim b'sochosim. He says that wine too can be considered as kosher even where the seal is one seal inside another seal. The Tarvayhu Karabonim, and both of them are really in agreement with the Rabbonim. But Mar Sovar, one authority feels, Ki Plige Rabbonin Aleid Rabbi Eliezer B'chosim Echod, that the disagreement with the rabbis with Rabbi Eliezer is if there's only one seal, Abol B'chosim B'so Chosim, but if there's a seal within a seal, sure, then they also agreed that the wine could be used. Umar Sovar, but the other authority felt that Afilu Chosim B'so Chosim Asra. He feels that even if you have a seal within a seal, so they still prohibited it. So now the question is, so tell me, what does a seal within a seal look like? So Omar Rava, so Rava gave one interpretation. He says, Agono de fumo de chavisa shirika de chasima. Okay, he says, if you take a basin, a gun, means a basin, okay? You put it, the fuma de chasima, you put it over the mouth of a barrel, okay? Shrika, and then you know what you do. You plaster it. You put plaster all around it in order to seal it, right? The chasima, and then you put a stamp on it too. Okay, yeah, not bad. So the Abbe says, that's heavy chasima, it's heavy chasima. This is a seal within the seal. Okay. The lo, right? And if not, right? Okay. How about another type? It says the kula. Rashi explains the kula means he takes a basket and he puts it on top of the barrel. Right, or I, not when I say at the top, I mean on the mouth of the. Yeah, right. Yeah, but the kula, you take a look at the Rashi over there. Okay, see Shrika, he tells us toch petit, right, that he smears it, you know, with plaster, with dibek, right, and then he glues it sevivos pi on this one, right. All around the mouth of the basin and so on and to the walls of the barrel. The next one, the Tekuli, says, Kofa Sal Alpi Chodes. He took a basket and he put it over the mouth of the barrel. Of course, when I say mouth, it means, you know, where it's coming from, okay? The Hachovis Meguva, And therefore now what happens? The barrel is now plugged up. Okay? The Hainu Beis Chesomas, right? Because now we see that there are two seals. Okay? Meguf HaSachovitz, Shed Ruke Bachovitz, Venisbayesho, Venisyabsho, right? The Salkofi, in other words, first of all, you have, that the plug is, first of all, it's stuck in the barrel itself, and then, right, and it gets hardened, and then you put a basket on top of that. So that is, again, a double seal, okay? In other words, a double seal could be in different things. As I pointed out to you a few moments ago, in our day, there's many a bottle of wine that comes, with like a wax seal on top, right? And then below, you have a cork or something like that. So that's also a double seal.
Or even
right.
They have like a little metal thing.
Right. Okay. So I have two different examples of what we mean, okay? So it's the Kudel Mahadek, right, and he fastens a basket, right? So that's also Helichosim Sechosim. Okay. But Loy Mahadek, if this basket is not fastened to the barrel of wine, in other words, it's not, it's loose and so on, then in that particular case, Loy Helichosim Sechosim. Okay? And it's not a seal within a seal. Then he gives another example. Nod bediskia. Okay, nod we know is, the skins that they use in order to keep wine, water, and so on inside of it. Okay? And it's put inside a diskia. Diskia is like a container. Okay? So you have a skin put inside a container. Okay? And chasimas piv lemata. The skin, which has been put inside the container, you twist it around and seal it on the bottom. Okay? So, hevechosim is hechosim, right? So, this is, also a double seal. But, if instead of having the tie on the bottom, you have it on the top, which makes it easier, of course, to do what? To open it up, right? And then, in that particular case, it is not a seal within a seal. Bechikayev pume legoy, right? But sorry, the chosim. All right. Now another. Bechikayev pume legoy. All right. If he bends the mouth of it literally inside something and he ties it up, the chosim, so that's also heavy chosim b'sei chosim. All right, these are all examples of chosim b'sei chosim. Tanu Rabbanan, our sages taught us, Bori Shoino, at first, Oyu Omrim, they used to say, Yayin shel ein kushi, osim ipnei biras sarika. Okay. Well, let me explain that. Thank God that we have a Rashi. Okay. Right. Okay. He explains to us, first of all, okay, that this place, Ein Kushi, right? Ein Kushi. I don't know where in Eretz Yisrael Ein Kushi is, but literally means the fountain of Kushi, okay. So at any rate, that's a place, he says, it's Mokim Kusim. He says that who are the inhabitants of this particular town? He says they were Kusim. Who are Kusim? That we learned several times. Kusim are the what we call the Shomronim, the Samaritans, right? Okay. So,
were they considered idol worshippers?
Not necessarily, although there's a Gemara that suggests that it says that they worship the birds in their temple in Har Gerizim, so that therefore they decide. A bird. What the bird symbolizes, I don't know. But they worship the bird on Mount Gerizim. You know, Mount Gerizim is the place outside the city of Shomron, where that was. That's where they had their temple, right? Okay. So this was right near a place. Let's see, where is my place again? So then, of course, you write also Bnei Biras Srika. He says the wine over there is prohibited because of its nearness to a place called Biras Srika. Who lived in Biras Srika? Goyim, idolaters. Okay. So what was the fear? The fear was that maybe the Samaritans were not careful about the idol worshippers touching the wine. This is what they were afraid of.
I'm sorry, they didn't last part.
The Samaritans were not careful about the idolaters not touching the wine of the kusim. Okay? And he gives a couple of other localities now. Michelle Barkiso. Also, they Kfar Parshai. Okay. Then the people lived in a town called Barkiso. So they were also Kusim, and their wine also was prohibited by the.
Where was
it?
The temple was already destroyed.
No. The temple still existed when Hera was there. Oh, yeah. The temple was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era. Right. Whereas I'm talking about, you know, prior. Right.
So the Tanoim were all prior.
They were prior to the year 200.
The year 200
of the Common Era.
The Common Era.
Right.
But you said that Hillel, who lived before.
Yeah, well, he would be a Talmud because he's one of the early authorities.
Over a long period of time.
Right, oh, absolutely. The period of Tanoim, we can say, really began with the return from Babylonian exile to Eretz Yisrael. You had, first of all, there were still some prophets left at the time of the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash.
Was that about 500?
Approximately. Approximately, right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to get the timeline.
Right.
It's so hard to remember that.
Yeah. And then after that, you had the establishment of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the members of the Great Assembly, and there were 120 leaders of the Jewish people, including, you know, those who led the exiles back from Babylonia and so on. And then eventually we learned that Shimon HaTzadik, this is what it says right at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, that Shimon HaTzadik was among the last members of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. All right. After that, we have other authorities who would be, I guess you can consider them early Tanoim, even if they didn't have that title, right? And that included also a whole series of what we call Zugos. Zugos means pairs. Why? Because if you take a look in Pirkei Avos, you'll see that someone would say Shmaya and Aftalion, all right? Nitayar Bailey and etc. etc. You take a look at the first chapter of Pirkei Avos. You have a listing of various zugos, which can, you know, which end with Hillel and Shammai. Each one, you know, was a great authority. After that, the people who were the heads of the yeshiva happened to be the descendants of Hillel. Okay. Gamliel, Shimon, right? Shimon ben Gamliel, and so on. So they were the heads of the academy, and Shimon ben Gamliel was one of the martyrs killed by the Romans. Okay, and Yehuda HaNasi was a descendant also. So you have, in other words, a whole dynasty started by Hillel, and. As I said, approximately the year 200 of the Common Era, So in other words, they're talking about a span of almost 900 years or something like that, you understand? So we finally have the editing, so to speak, of the Mishnah. Okay.
That happened after, so around the 200.
Around the year 200, the Common Era, correct. Now, from that point on, they use the Mishnah as a text, as we can see. We start with the Mishnah, right? And then the Gemara represents the various arguments, amplifications, etc., etc., you know, based upon the text of the Mishnah. Okay? So, people, the authorities now are not called anymore Tanoim, but they are called now Amoraim. And of course, they had various generations of Amoraim too, because the redaction.
They did the redacting.
Yeah, well, they were the authorities, right? And then eventually, the Gemara was also redacted together with the Mishnah. This is what we call the Talmud.
Yeah.
Now, this particularly happens to be what we call the Talmud Bavli. It's the Babylonian Talmud. But in Eretz Yisrael, there was also a different Talmud. That we call the Talmud Yerushalmi. In other words, the Jerusalem Talmud, literally. Okay? Not as voluminous as this. And also, it deals with areas that were not touched over here. Why? Because if we take a look at the Mishnah, we see that the Mishnah has six major orders. We call them Shisho Sidre Mishnah. If you remember with Echad Miyodea and so on, right? Right. So we talk about the Shisho Sidre Mishnah, six orders of the Mishnah. Right. Now, the first order, Zeroyim, Zeroyim means seeds. What does it deal with primarily? The agriculture, all kinds of agriculture. Things that, you know, I've been talking about. Peya, Leket, Shecho, you know, various rules for the poor people. Or Maser, the various tithes. You have the Maser Rishon, Maser Sheni, Maser Oni, and so on. And you have the Bai, which questions, the question is it... has it been tithed properly, and so on, right? And then later on you have, for example, Shavuos, it's called Bikurim, which deals with the ceremony of the first fruits, the bringing of the first fruits, how do you do it, and then the possession to Yerushalayim, bearing it, and things like that, and so on. So that you see that primarily it deals with agriculture, okay? Shavuos is, of course, another one. What is Shavuos? Shavuos is the law concerning the seventh year when the land has to lie fallow. And, the products, things that grow in the seventh year, what can you do with them and so on, okay? So, these things form part of the Babylonian, of the Yerushalmi.
You actually have to study both.
To be a real Torah scholar, definitely, no question about that. Right, right, right. Yeah, you should also become familiar with the Rishabi. And, you know, sometimes the Rishabi will give a reason for something that's not in the Bavli or vice versa. So,
so the Bavli one was done while they were in exile?
Yeah, in Babylonia.
Right.
That's what
that
it means.
Would have been earlier. Would it not have
no.
No,
we're talking about the Jewish community that lived in Babylonia. Once Jews went to Babylonia at the time of the destruction of the first temple, there was a Jewish community that remained over there. They remained there for several thousand years. Right.
Again, the timeline.
Right. I mean, there were Jews who were living in Iraq, which essentially occupies part of the territory that once upon a time was Babylonia, right? Yeah, you had Jews living in Baghdad, for example, had a big Jewish community. You had Amoraim in Babylonia, you had Amoraim in Eretz Israel, that's what I'm saying. So, naturally, when we study over here, very often they'll say, you know, they'll quote, for example, Rabbi Yochanan, right? Rabbi Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael. So his teachings would be brought to Babylonia too, You understand? And so you always have, when Rav Dumi came, where did he come? It means he came to Babylonia from Eretz Israel, or Rabin, Yosef Rabin, when Rabin came, and so on and so forth. So you had people who went back and forth bringing the various traditions of Eretz Israel to Babylonia, and presumably from Babylonia to Eretz Israel as well. Yeah.
Period was considerably shorter.
Yes, from that point of view.
About
300 years or something like that.
What sort of precipitated sort of the end of that period so that the text was sort of created?
All right. What happened in Babylonia was... What happened to Babylonia was the fact that, you know, that the material became so voluminous that it was necessary to organize it and, you know, put it down so that we could study. Subsequently, after that, you had different groups of scholars, you know, from various other periods of time. As, for example, you've heard about the Gaonim. Who were the Gaonim? The Gaonim were the heads of the Babylonian academies who came, you know, subsequently. And so you have, you know, they authored works, you know, of various types, you know, first of all to explain and also eventually, you know, to lead to various halachas again. And this, of course, formed the foundation for scholars who came, as you know, for example, Maimonides, Rashi, and so on and so forth, you know, who came in a later period in time, and so on. So this is how the tradition has been kept. And of course, people would write down their things in manuscript form, and then you had people who would copy the manuscripts. With printing, you know, that started a brand new era altogether. Yeah.
So
yes.
The Talmud was sort of decided to be completed at a time when the writings became so voluminous that
To a certain extent too. Now, Eretz Yisrael, the Rishalmi was concluded earlier. Why? Because the Christian persecution was already so great that there was a great deal of trouble that you know, the Jewish community in Eretz Israel suffered, you know, at the hands of the Christians. Remember, don't forget, approximately the year 300 something or other, 310, whatever it was, the Roman Empire became officially you know, converted to Christianity, and as a result, you know, once the Christians got in control, then they began to make life very miserable for the Jews, because they felt that Judaism was a competing religion, and there was a time when many of the goyim preferred to go to shul, to base medrash, or something like that, than to listen to what was going on in the churches over there. So this is part of the reason why they changed Shabbos into Sunday, and why they issued all kinds of prohibitions against the Jews, not allowed to have servants, not allowed to do this, not allowed to do that, and so on and so forth. So,
looking at that,
Yeah, but there were earlier ones. There were earlier councils that they had. Right. Well, that's much earlier than what you say. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let me just complete over here to the bottom of the page, and we'll call it a night. Okay. All right. So here, there were these communities, right, where Kusim predominated, and they were right next to areas which where the idolaters predominated, right? Next day in Kushi, you had Birasrika. Next to Barkasar, that wine was prohibited by our sages because of Kfar Prashai. And the Shel Zagdur, it's another place over there, also named Kfar Shalim. This place called Kfar Shalim, where a lot of us. So, as a result, Chazu Lomar, they said, Chogios Besuchos Asuros, Susumos Mutoris. They say, if you have barrels which are open, then you're not allowed to do what? To drink the wine thereof, right? But if the barrels are sealed, then it is permitted. So the Gemara wants to know, Meyakora Maisover. So tell me, to begin with, what did they think? What was their opinion? Velefsof Basor. And finally, what was the opinion that they held then? So he says, Meyakora Sovor. To begin with, the feeling was, Ein Kusi Makpid Al Maga Oved Kochavim. Right? That the Kusim are not particular, they're not careful about an idolater touching, you know, the wine. And lo shno psuchos for lo shno susumos. And it made no difference whether the barrel of wine was open or whether it was closed, the barrel was shut. But if so, however, finally, sober, they said, Kilo kofit apsuchos asusumis makpit kofit. In other words, the Samaritans, right, they're not maybe careful about open, but when it's closed, they are careful to make sure that what? That it's not going to be touched, right? Asusumos mutoros, and therefore they said that the closed ones are open, are permitted. Okay, I'll stop at this point because Ramino means already, and they raised a question, but I'll stop before the question. Okay, let's see, what day is today? Today's the 8th, I think.
Today's the
8th of June. The 8th of June, okay, in the year 2005, and we are now on Aveda Zohar, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis, 31A. B, excuse me. Tell me. I'm so tired that my mind and my tongue do not connect at times. Okay. All right. What is the contradictory statement? So it says, Hashenoya Chovis Shel Yayin, Yad Kusi. If somebody sends a barrel of wine by a kutzi. In other words, if there's a man, a good Jew, or something like that, and he says, Mr. Kutzi, take this barrel of wine and deliver it to this and this destination, right? Or we shall tzir, we shall burias. Or tzir and burias, which I'll explain in a second, biyat oivet kochelet. This time it's through not a kutzi, but it's through a goy. A goy. Alright. So, of course, we have to say, what are we talking about over here? What is Tzir and what is Murias? Well, I've spoken about Tzir and Murias before, particularly about the Murias. Okay. Take a look at the Rashi. Towards the end of the second line over there of Rashi, Mishal Tzir and Murias, it says, Behad Eve Kechon, he says, Zorich HaKoras Choysen Tzir. He says, if we wanted to have Tzir, and what is tzir? This I will explain to you right now. Tzir is brine caused by, let's say, if they put fish into brine in order to preserve it. Like, for example, the herring, okay?
Marinated herring.
Yeah, sort of like a herring, okay? Put into the brine, and so he sends it right through a goy. What is Murias? Murias is a kind of a hash where they chopped up pieces of fish, mixed it with oil, and according to Rashi also they used like the insides of the fish in order to make it fatter, you know, to give it more taste and so on, right? Yeah. So I explained to you once upon a time that in Pompeii they found a jar upon which was written Morius Casta. Casta in Latin means pure. Okay? In other words, pure. Obviously, this was the Hefshah that was on it.
Oh, really?
Right. It was a Hefshah.
It was a good Hefshah. Did you check it?
Apparently, it was a good Hefshah. So, Rashi then says, that you put a seal on it. That's the point. You have to put a seal on the barrel or the jar, whatever it may be. And it says, right, and even though the custom is, says Rashi, that you don't put wine into this mixture of Murias, the Demei Yahayayin Yekorim, Michel Tzir, you know why? Because it costs more money for wine than for Tzir itself, you know, the bride, right? So Miyuchai, you shouldn't do the Machlifle, but Tzir shall dog him to Meir. Still, we have a certain fear that maybe they would mix it with the brine of fish which were not kosher. Well, Murius Chayashid and either the May Murius Yakorim in the Mayayin, and as far as Murius, even then, according to Rashi, that costs even more money than wine itself. Mm-hmm. So Dilma Shokol Murius, Bayal Chamra, and Morabay. So maybe he'll take Murius and mix more wine into it. So in order to cheapen it, right? Aval kutsi lechoshed lechalufi. Now, kutsi he's not suspected that he's going to make such a change, right? Mizeya v'zibo shel dogim shekavusha shekosha v'machbesh. Because they take this fish and they put it into a press. And believe it or not, the stuff becomes as strong as vinegar. What do? They use it as a dip. Okay? They use it as a dip. Okay. So, obviously, then we see, this particular case, if the jar or the barrel carries a seal, right? So Gemara says now at the end of the second line, if he recognizes the seal on it, because don't forget, you know, every seal had some, you know, distinct stamp, right? And the barrel is closed, or the jar is closed, in that case, it's permitted. Im lav, also. But if not, it's prohibited. Now, of course, what is he adding over here as compared to what we had on the other page? Sounding the fact that it isn't enough simply to be closed, but what else? It has to be sealed as well. It has to have a seal on it. Okay. So Amar Rabbi Zera like Kasha. So Rabbi Zera says, there's no difficulty over here. He says, Kadba here, Kadba there. He says, in the city, if you know we find this barrel in the city, then in that particular case, Rashi says, Kofit Kusi, the Kusi is very careful. The Sovar, because his thought is, Hashta Naga Evet Kechovim V'yeni V'lezabni Meini. It says, if the Goy touches my wine over there, even though it's sealed, right, then in that particular case, I won't be able to sell it, right? People are not going to buy it from me. So, therefore, in the city, it's easier to recognize a seal and so on and so forth, and the people, the kusi would be careful. Kan baderach, however, if the wine has to travel a long way before it gets to the city, then it's possible, he says, that they're fooling around over there, right? So, Maskev lo Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah immediately attacks that opinion because he says, also tell me, the barrels of wine in the city, didn't they come from the field?
they had to be, you know. So the temptation was there all the way, right? But rather Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. It says, Bein Hagita is Shonidu. We have learned this particular teaching is in reference if it is between the various presses of life. Kevin Dukhuli Alba Adche Mirtas. Inasmuch as a lot of people are busy treading out the wine from the grapes, and a lot of people be there, so Mirtas, he's afraid to do something that's going to be to look shady and, you know, and let a goy touch it or something like that, and therefore you'll be more careful. Omar Hashtay Chosi Li Mavsidi Li, because he says, hey, if somebody sees me, it's going to be my loss.
Marzayan.
Right. Okay. Itmar. Another thing that we had, it says, Neymar Osu Sheikho Shalotikov. For what reason did they prohibit the beer of idolaters? You know, until now we've been talking about wine, we've been talking about vinegar, right? And now we come to beer. Why did they prohibit the beer? So Rabbi Bar Chodo and Bar Choma Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi the son of Choma said the name Rabbi Yitzchak. He said, Mishur Mekasot. He says, you know why? Why don't they permit beer to be drunk? Goyish beer? Because they don't want to encourage intermarriage. Chasonis, I mean, we recognize the word chasin, right? We don't want to encourage intermarriage. How would be discouraging intermarriage? Because obviously, when you have a marriage party or you have an engagement party, so people make a l'chaim. Right? So, if we're going to drink goyish wine, the first thing that we know will be fraternizing with the goyim, and that'll lead to intermarriage. See, this is the fear. Okay? Rav Nachman Omar, Rav Nachman is a different reason. He says, you know why they prohibited goyish beer? It's Mishum Gilui Agilye. Mishum Gilui. They don't, because again, they're afraid of what? That the water that has been used in order to make the beer has been what? Go ahead. Why? How has it been contaminated?
It was open.
And the snake, right. The snake may have deposited some poison inside. Exactly. Yeah. So, according to Rav Nachman, this was the reason why they prohibited the beer. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, the prohibition was in order to discourage intermarriage. Okay? So they say, Iglui Demai. What are we talking about when you say it's going to be uncovered? Ilaimod Gilui Nazioso. If we say that the vats in which they are brewing the beer will be uncovered, so he says, Ananami Magdalena. Says, you know, the way we make beer, we make the beer the same way. In other words, what? We also use vats that are uncovered. Today, I think the way they make beer, it's fairly all mechanized and everything else, but, you know, it's quite a job, right? The Ella, the Chavisa. So maybe we're talking about the barrel. What barrel? So as we said, the barrel in which the water was caved, you know, whether it was covered or not. Not in million, as I say, but don't we also, you know, the chavisa, we have to say the chavisa means that the barrel in which they put it afterwards, you know, after it's been brewed, also is uncovered. So it says, we also keep it uncovered. So it says, Lot Zricho, where do we need it? But us with the Mastel Maya, that we need it where they have to let water stand in order to purify the water. Obviously, water sometimes has sediment that, you know, goes to the bottom, and they have to make sure that the water that they use is free of the sediment.
I thought the snake only liked wine.
Huh? Well, sometimes he likes beer too, apparently. Tell you those snakes, you can't trust that snake. He's looking for a good time.
Yeah. So what's the difference then?
Huh?
So what is the difference then?
What is the difference
between them? So it's uncovered.
Okay. So in other words, if we know definitely that the water that is used for the beer comes from a cupboard in that particular case, that's all right. But if the water is uncovered, then in that case, that's if you hold the second opinion that the prohibition is what? Because of uncovered water.
Right.
You understand? Yeah. Elamiata, but that being the case, Yoshin Tishtari, why shouldn't we permit old beer to be used? Why? Because what do you think? The snake enjoys old beer? No, he wants to have what? He wants to have good beer, fresh beer.
No, we want to eat beer. We don't want good beer. Like, he's about a beer now.
I don't know if you ever went into a bar and get beer. What is it? The beer on the tap? Beer on the tap. Okay.
It's smart.
So, right. So when it's fresh, it's one thing. But when it gets down to the bottom of the barrel over there, the beer loses something. So so I guess the snake is a maven when it comes to beer, and that's it, you know.
It's a maven. Yeah.
The maven.
He doesn't spit in it.
Right.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay, so we say
the snake out of it.
Yeah, the Amar Rav was, Rav said, it says Yoshin Mutar, right? If the deer is old, then it's okay.
Amar Rav.
And Ein Manichel Yerashayin, that you don't let it, you don't stay around in order to get old. Okay. Ech means, however, if wine turns sour, it's also permissible, but ein manichalach means, you know, it's not going to let it, you know, get sour. So, in other words, since we know that this is the property, that old beer or old wine doesn't taste very good, although actually with old wine you can have good, it all depends on what circumstances. Because, as a matter of fact, I have to tell you that one of the treats in Gan Eden will be to drink, you know, Yayin Yoshin, wine that is ancient, okay, from the days, you know, yet from the days of creation, okay. So that's Yayin Yoshin.
Yayin what?
Yeah. But
Yayin what?
Yoshin. Yoshin is old in Hebrew. Yoshin
old.
Means
Yoshin
old.
Is old.
Old.
The
right.
Talmud says the wine is the greatest of all food and drink.
Yeah.
Also.
Well, they like to look. I mean, we say in Borchi Nafshi, what? What are the two things that they praise? Wine and bread.
Right?
Wine gladdens the heart of man, right? When bread serves as the main support.
Plenty of wine and bread,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
Well, it's interesting, you say gladdens the heart of man, which of course, when they drink it, you get.
Yeah, you get a little sugar.
But on another level, they are talking about improving heart health.
Yeah, today, yeah. Correct.
So that's
right.
An interesting take on that.
Right,
statement.
Right. Of course, it doesn't mean that you should drink to get drunk.
No, I don't touch it, but
I
keep hoping grapefruit has the same effect.
Supposed to.
They say, yeah, the grape.
Certainly they advertise.
Yeah,
Welch's
yeah.
Grapefruit advertises
yeah,
that they
yeah.
have the same.
They don't have the Hefshi one.
No.
Is there a Yoshan?
Okay.
Put a,
yeah.
What's that saying?
Okay. Zera Yoshan Atul Chadash. This means, therefore, we issue a decree against drinking old. Because we're afraid you'll be tempted to drink new. I mean, we have these gazeras, you know, where we'll issue a severe decree because of a fear that, you know, since we're using
it. It doesn't make any difference whether it's old or new. It's
right.
The decree is the decree.
Yes.
Stands, okay.
No, so now we come to Rav Papa.
Rav Papa.
Rav Papa. What about Rav Papa? He says, "But think it lay Rav Baba the Chaduso the Shosim. They would take out to the door of the store, and he would drink it out there in public. What would he drink? Obviously, he would be drinking beer or something like that, which he wasn't afraid, you know, that whether a goy touched it or not, it didn't bother him. And he said, Rav Achai, I mean, this reminds us a little bit of the business that we learned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Yain Mevushal, right? One opinion was that, you know, if the goy touches it, then Yain Mevushal is also no good. But we learned that the halacha is that Yain Mevushal, you don't have to worry about whether a goy touches it or not, right?
Rav Papa would drink the wine, or the Yadav Worship would drink
No, he would drink it.
Rav Papa
would drink it.
Would drink the wine from
Right, but he did it in public. He did it in an open place.
But it wasn't kosher wine.
Doesn't that go by?
I didn't talk about wine. I'm talking about beer.
Beer, rather.
Back against the beer.
Was it kosher beer?
It didn't bother him. He's of the opinion that beer touched by an Ovid Kechavim is all right.
Even if it's from an idol worship?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Didn't they also go by the theory if it wasn't an open place, like a town or whatever, that the chances of anything wrong happening would be very slim? Didn't we learn
that? Yeah, right. Well, the point is, but doing it in the open, thereby, you know, averts suspicion on the part of people that, you know, he's fooling around on the inside of the store over there. No.
Who's fooling around?
Although, frankly, the Egyptians...
Who's fooling around?
The Egyptians could have. I mean, we have certain cultures where they did. But it was not as widespread as wine. Wine was really the universal libation, more so than beer.
And if he was having it outside, you assume it's like
what's the distinction that he have it outside? I don't understand that.
Like a picnic lunch.
He wanted to show that he was not afraid to drink it out by doing it in the open.
Yeah. So what?
Whereas if he had
it
inside the store, people might be suspicious that he's doing something.
He's doing something what?
Right.
What?
Wrong.
Long.
He's doing something wrong by drinking goyish beer, okay?
By drinking it outside.
By drinking it outside, it shows that he's not afraid to tell you
that
he's drinking goyish wine and he's not goyish beer and he's not afraid.
Right. Okay.
That's the idea.
All right.
Yeah.
He's advertising.
He's advertising it, right? And to show, you know, openly to everybody that his opinion's okay.
And what about Rabbi?
Then now we come to Rabbi Achai. He says, "My salei levesei v'shasi." He would actually have the beer brought into his house, and he would drink it.
Yeah. All right, good for him.
Yeah, the tavayhu mishum chasodis. Okay. So the point is that both of them were really concerned about the business of intermarriage. That they didn't drink their beer where? At a party with goyim.
That's the whole idea.
Right.
See, okay.
They didn't drink it at a party with goyim. Instead, one would drink it out in the open, okay? And the other one would actually drink it in his house, but in his house there was no fraternization. With the goyim.
Okay.
That's the point.
Look how true that is. Look at America, a bar. You know, everybody white, black, goy, this, that, all there, meeting each other.
Yeah, so we don't have a Jewish bar here. That's all. We don't have a
cheers.
Jewish
cheers.
Bar.
Where everybody knows your name.
If I can meet Jewish girls, of course, the goy says you meet Jewish girls. Girls meet Jewish girls.
Okay.
Everybody loves me.
Yeah.
All right.
Look at it. Okay. So we say, Rav Achai Oved Harchoki Yiserto. Rav Achai actually, he was more careful, shall we say, to avoid any fraternization than the others. In other words, if we take a look at the two of them, right? Rav Papa wasn't afraid to show in public, you know, that he's drinking. Okay? Whereas Rav Achai drank the beer but he was very careful to do it in the house where he definitely would not be anywhere near Goyim, and not be suspected of the possibility of intermarriage over there.
Would you say that Rabbi Achai is more machmir than Papa?
In this particular case, yeah. The answer was yes.
Okay.
Now, if we take a look at the that little dollar that you see over there, which is Rabbi Baisai, later they say, Shosai, that would imply that, according to the Rambam, if you're drinking Goyish beer, drink it at home. Don't drink it in public. That's what would imply.
Really?
Because it would imply that you should be following Rabbi Achai. Okay. We're not so particular. I mean, as far as we're concerned today,
beer is beer.
And beer is beer. And we know that, as a normal rule, they're not going to mix in any wine.
That's
in
right.
The beer.
Well, there are
hefshers. Does it need? The answer is that Coors beer does have a hefsher on it. And possibly some other beers will eventually.
What hefsher does Coors have?
How's it on you?
Oh, you?
Yeah.
You decided to do it the other
way? Yes. They did it about a year or two ago.
But you say it doesn't matter?
No, we possibly that it doesn't really matter.
I mean, you drink Coors, Budweiser.
Right.
How about Stout?
About what?
There are some beers that are more sugar, sure.
Do they mix wine in them?
We're worried about mixing with wine.
What about Guinness?
Guinness is stout? I don't know what that is. That's
stronger.
I don't know how stout.
Heavier beer. More.
You have to be a beer connoisseur, I guess.
What about whiskey?
Whiskey depends on the type of whiskey you're talking about. Most Scotch whiskey is considered kosher. But the problem is that there are some that are aged in barrels that once upon a time were used to the whole wine, exactly. So that's why, right.
The
question is how much it would or not.
They're a good quality Scotch. They want a brand new barrel. They don't want to use anything that's
correct. Right. As far as rye concerned, most rye is considered all right, unless again we have a reason to suspect that it's been aged. Bourbon is certainly okay. Vodka is considered okay. Gin is also considered okay. But the biggest problem that you have is with liqueurs, because liqueurs very often do have a wine base. So there you have to know definitely that a liqueur that you drink has actually a hefsher on it.
How about Slivovitz?
Slivovitz, normally it's okay, right.
Yeah,
the only question with Slivovitz is for Pesach, right? Let's say during the year, Slivovitz is perfectly all right, because it's also, a grain alcohol or something. Not a grain, I don't know.
Sherry, they make sherry brandy too.
Sherry herring.
Yeah.
Cherry herring is already a kind of a wine.
Some people prefer
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was in a place where always worried somebody was a goy sitting down at the Pesach table. They would always make sure the wine was moved.
Yeah.
Because I brought some wine and it was not Mirushah. I assumed that everybody there was Jewish and it happened not to be. So he took it away.
Yeah, well, we've been learning in the past few weeks about the importance of Yain Mevushel. The fact that, according to both of the authorities, it's okay. Huh?
Even if it has a direct extra wine, it's not the shovel.
Mevushel, you mean? Yeah.
No, they accept it, but it's the problem.
The problem with whether the wine is Mevushel or not is, for example, can a goy touch it? Can a waiter put it down on the table? Understand? Because if it is not the bushel, then if a goy touches it, we say you can't use it. Okay? Whereas if it is the bushel, it's not a problem. But if it's not bavushal, then you have to be very careful that all the yeshiva shabbos is handling it.
How about if it's in a closed bottle? What if they touch the bottle?
Now the bottle itself, as long as it's sealed, is not a problem. It's only once you take the seal off that it becomes
a problem. Once you open it, it's a
pour. Right, once you open it. Right, yeah. Okay.
All right.
To continue. All right.
Rav Shmuel.
Well, okay. So, Rav Shmuel about this the Ikla the Bhagavan. Rav Shmuel, son of Bisna, came to a place. It's not the one that we normally talk about, Shmuel. It's another. Not the authority, but the
Bhagavan.
So he came to a place called Bhagavan, someplace in Persia, whatever it was, you know, Babylonia. And Ashley Chabrod, so they brought him wine, but they asked him. He didn't drink it. Ashley Shichro, so they brought him beer, but they asked him, and he didn't drink that either. So, Bishlamo Chabra Mishum Shimsa, Shichro Mishum Mai, says, okay, wine may be afraid that there's something wrong over there, okay? But beer, what could be wrong about it? So that's what he says, right? Mishum Mai. For what reason? So he says, Mishum Shimsa the Shimsa. Because I'm afraid that maybe there may be something that may be not so good.
A suspicion of a suspicion.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Drinking a beer may lead to the wine.
Drink a what?
Drink the beer, if you get drunk enough,
you can
drink the wine,
smoke,
and
what
you're doing.
Okay. Kind of sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good.
Since you see the guy drinking it, so this guy might get drunk, he might do it with the other stuff.
He would know, sure. All right, I'm a Rob.
Okay. I'm a Rob. Hi, Shichra, the Arabah, Shore. Okay, so Rav says, the beer of the Arameans, well, that's okay, he says. The Chia Bari lo nishtay b'dem. Nevertheless, my son Chia doesn't drink of it.
Why?
Manashot. What's going on?
Why?
He says,
why?
He shore the Chuliyama. He shore the Chuliyama, Shore, right? If beer is permitted, then it's permitted to everybody. I don't know why he doesn't.
About Rav's son, yeah.
And he asks here, and if it's, on the other hand, it's prohibited to drink the beer, then the Chuliyam is also here, then it should be prohibited to everyone. Hello, Rav Sova Mishum Giluye, right? But he was afraid of the fact that maybe it had been left uncovered, right? The Azil Maroya de Khashusoso, the Kalale Zihare, with the Loki Malkulate thing. All right. In other words, what is he afraid of over here? He's afraid that, afraid that everybody, it would be great.